your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day for a political shake-up. You could say a shake-up or a shape-up. There is all kinds of talk about new parties, new political movements, different approaches to our politics than we see from Republicans or Democrats at the moment. Also talk about shaking up the Supreme Court of the United States. No, not with court packing, but with term limits. People love term limits when it's an idea that's put forward. Usually it polls very well when it comes to the Congress of the United States. But what about an 18-year term limit for Supreme Court justices? That is at least what one of the commissions that was called together by President Biden is suggesting. Horrible idea, or something that could actually make the court more responsive to the moment? Speaking of more responsive to the moment, Andrew Yang, former candidate for mayor of New York, who has a devoted following known as the Yang Gang, is now out with a new book and a new political party, the Forward Party. I think the idea he wants to put forward is that the Forward Party would be a party of the center, not of the left, not of the right. How's that supposed to work? And what does that mean for the other candidates, including Donald J. Trump, who would be running for president in 2024? We'll talk about that with Andrew Yang, the man himself. He will be joining us shortly. And we will also be joined by Brett Baer of Fox News. He suggests that with President Trump being absolutely insistent on going forward with his emphasis on charges of electoral fraud and the notion that the election was stolen, Brett Baer says there are some powerful lessons from the one election in all American history that really was kind of stolen. That would be the election of 1876, a new book about lessons concerning Ulysses S. Grant and what President Biden or any future president could learn from Grant when it comes to talking about election legitimacy. And it wasn't Grant's own election. It was for his successor, Rutherford B. Hayes. We will get to that with Brett Baer of Fox News. And also, speaking of a national shakeup, we will be joined by Hugo Gurdon, who is the managing editor of the Washington Examiner. They have launched a new program of change, conservative change. It is called Restoring America. The program is launched with a stark and bitter reality that Hugo Gurdon writes about. We will be speaking to him as well on the Michael Medved Show. Plus a movie where I can say flat out and give you fair warning, it's a terrific movie, a shockingly good movie, with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon and Adam Driver, and directed by Ridley Scott of Gladiator and Blade Runner fame. We will be talking about that film, which is called The Last Duel, and plus the prequel to the Sopranos TV series, which is called The Many Saints of Newark. That with James Gandolfini's son playing the role of Tony Soprano as a teenager. We will get to that as well on the Michael Medved Show. 1-800-955-1776. But first up, with all of this shakeup going on, a part of what has been dramatically shaken up has been the attitudes of the American people, and this according not to one poll, but to several, concerning big government. The American people generally have not favored big government. When they are asked by Gallup or asked by Pew Research, they both have polls on this, people do not want government to do more for them if it means higher taxes. And that is the very essence of what Joe Biden is trying to do. And part of what they are saying in both of these surveys, and even the Washington Post has picked that up and one of its editorial writers, Catherine Rampell, The Democrats are completely out of touch with what the American people are feeling. Here they are. They won a victory last time. They managed to hold on to the House of Representatives just barely. They took control of the Senate because of that dispute regarding the runoff in Georgia and the very last minute election after the regular election that installed Senator John Ossoff and Senator Raphael Warnock. Warnock will be up again for re-election in this coming year, in 2022. But with all of that, the American people did not send a message that we want a gigantic surge in government spending. The only times, there are two times over the last 30 years where polling has actually shown that the American people wanted bigger government rather than smaller government. When people are asked, would you rather have lower taxes and less government programs, or would you prefer more government programs and higher taxes? And only twice over the course of 30 years have the American people favored a more activist government. That was right after September 11th. And then right at the height of the pandemic. But today it's reversed. The headline over at Gallup says Americans revert to favoring reduced government role. That is not what Joe Biden has in mind. And even if they cut things down to the levels that are being demanded by Joe Manchin, that's still a much larger government role. It's still vastly increased spending. And to say, well, yeah, it's better to have increased spending of $2 trillion, for instance, rather than $3.5 trillion, yes, that's an improvement. But it's still calling for more government, and that's not what the American people want. There's the piece in Washington Post, headline, "A New Problem for Democrats, Americans Suddenly Want Smaller Government After All." "Inconvenient but true," writes Catherine Rampell. "Americans want government to do less, not more. Democrats cannot afford to just hand wave this problem away. In the first few months of the Biden administration, fawning media coverage declared that the president had inspired a new paradigm or consensus for robust activist government, harking back to the New Deal or the Great Society, or at least maybe the pre-Reagan era. Case in point. Since 1992, Gallup has been asking whether government should do more to solve the country's problems. Late last year, the share answering in the affirmative surged. For the first time ever, more than half of respondents, 54%, said they wanted more from their government. For context, the previous peak was shortly after 9/11 when the share touched 50%. But then it fell back down again. And today, it is a small minority of Americans who actually want government to do more. Respondents of all political persuasions, Democrats included, expressed weaker support for ambitious government than they had 1 year earlier, back in 2020. Independents showed the biggest decline. Listen to this. Independents will decide the next elections. They will decide the elections of 22. They'll decide the elections of 24. They had 56% who now say, 38% among independents, so now say they wanted government to do more. That was down from 50% in 2020. And Gallup, she points out, is not the only pollster documenting such patterns. So is this the kind of situation in which you need a shakeup and a new party? That's actually a relevant question to the idea of what happened in one America's previously most controversial election, where there was kind of a steal going on. That's the subject of the new book by Brett Baer. It's called To Rescue the Republic, U.S. Grant, The Fragile Union, and the Crisis of 1876. We'll get to that and more with Brett Baer coming up on The Medved Show. And on the Michael Medved show, one of the reasons that so many Americans were so horrified at what happened on January 6th and about the struggle that went on about the legitimacy of this last election is because, well, partially because they didn't have the background that Brett Baer has. Now, what does that have to do with Brett Baer? Brett has just written a terrific new book about a very important, very relevant subject, which is the last time and really the only other time where we had a deeply, seriously contested presidential election in terms of counting the votes. The name of his book is Ulysses S. Grant, The Fragile Union, and The Crisis of 1876. Brett, of course, is the Fox News Channel's chief political anchor and anchor of Special Report with Brett Baer. Brett, congratulations on the book. And you were interested in this subject even before the Stop the Steal intensity of the late part of 2020. Am I right?
Yes, that's right. Thanks for having me on. It's good to be here. I was actually finishing the book as we get to the point where January 6th happens. And, you know, I'm anchoring that day with the thought process of having worked up to that point about largely the crisis of 1876 and the end of Grant's two terms as president. So sitting there in the anchor chair, that actually became the beginning of the book. And that's where the book starts, is on January 6th.
Wow. And that's obviously a very appropriate association because, and when you look back on it and you've dug into it deeply and you write about it in detail, Samuel J. Tilden, who was the losing candidate, in quotes, in 1876, he's the only man ever to receive a majority of the popular vote, not just a plurality, but a majority of the popular vote, and to lose. Do you think he was treated fairly?
Well, I think going back, I think Samuel Tilden may have won. You know, all he needed was one state to swing his way. And remember, this is the time where, as a country, we are on the brink. We are on the cusp of tilting back into the Civil War. Grant, over 2 years, is seeing Reconstruction through in the South. He fights the KKK. He ushers in and gets in the 14th and 15th Amendments, getting citizenship for blacks and the right to vote. He is trying to follow up and move forward the vision of Abraham Lincoln. But it is contested because this election between Rutherford B. Hayes and Samuel Tilden, three states, South Carolina, Florida, and Louisiana, decide that they are putting up two sets of electors, and they cannot decide in the state, and they leave it to the federal government to decide. Well, it goes on and on for weeks, and it is Grant who leads this grand bargain, a commission, to finally find some resolve to this, and he does. Hayes is nominated to and inaugurated as president, and the South gets federal troops from coming out, Republicans from stop carpetbagging in these various states, basically autonomy in the South, and that is the end of Reconstruction, essentially.
Okay, absolutely. And it's one of those episodes in American history that hasn't gotten the attention it should and would actually be enlightening for people today, because the one thing that didn't happen was there wasn't continued insistence on the part of Tilden or the Democrats that, hey, we actually won this thing. There was more acceptance of it because of the bargain, because Hayes had basically... Also, Hayes had committed himself to being a one-term president, right? He had said he would not run for re-election.
Yeah. Also part of the whole grand deal. And And Democrats saw that as an opening. They were facing more years of Reconstruction was winding down. It was coming to an end. It was becoming untenable to have troops in those states. And Grant knew that, but used the end of that time to be kind of a carrot and stick approach to keeping the Union together. Because above all, that's really what Grant wanted to do.
You know, Grant's position for the American people, and as somebody who's dealing with history every day in your job at Fox, you must wonder about this. When I was a kid in college, Grant was considered one of our worst presidents. He, all of those lists of historians, he was rated right down there at the bottom with James Buchanan and Warren Harding. And now Grant is a near great, and there are tons of new books about him, most notably at the moment, To Rescue the Republic, Ulysses Grant, The Fragile Union, and Crisis of 1876 by you, bestseller already. Why do you think Grant's reputation and his position in history has improved so dramatically over the last 20 years?
I think it's a great, great question. Grant has moved more than any other president on that presidential list. He's jumped 13 spots in recent years. And yet, you know, when you talk about Grant, you don't talk about him as president. You talk about him as Union general, as Lincoln's guy, as this great military strategist, which he was. But his time as president is largely overlooked. Historians now see him in a different light, in the wake of what we know of what happened as civil rights and all that it's ensued after Grant's presidency. A lot of the fault of the vestiges of Reconstruction is dumped onto Grant. And it really is, Michael, like that song in Hamilton where, you know, it matters who's writing your history, you know, who is writing your story. Because Grant's time is really consequential and pivotal for the country. And people around that time believed Grant was one of the greatest presidents. But over history, as we lived past Reconstruction and all of the civil rights strife in the South, etc., it's all dumped on Grant, and he goes down a number of spots over the years.
And do you think that Grant has any lessons in particular to teach Donald J. Trump?
Well, yes. I mean, I think so. I think keeping the Union together, advancing for the country, that thought process, and they are different characters in history. They're much different personalities, obviously. But that leadership of, above all, the good of the country is something that's interesting. And, you know, he puts out, Trump does, the statement the other day about Republicans not voting in 2022 or 2024 without the resolution of the 2020 election. I think for most Republicans, the 2020 election has been resolved, and they want to fight a new battle.
Amen to that. People can read about the battles of a tremendous warrior in our history, Ulysses S. Grant. On the Michael Medved Show, one of the items that I think we can all learn from President Grant, and not just General Grant, is the idea that pushing for justice, for civil rights, for at least undermining and rolling back the racism that had been associated with the evil institution of slavery, that is not incompatible with uniting the country. Grant was tremendously popular. He ran on the slogan, "Let us have peace," because he had been the great military leader who had achieved peace, but achieved peace by destroying the Confederacy and basically undermining its ideas. And much more than the Republicans who followed him, Grant was very committed to a civil rights platform, to guaranteeing citizenship rights, freedom, liberty, and voting rights for black people, and defending the right of black people to serve in government, where they were elected, in some cases, by overwhelmingly black electorates. Now, all of that did not take away the confidence, because he was such a titanic figure in our history, the confidence then that he maintained with people in the southern states. So one of the aspects I think that has increased the appreciation of President Grant has been the change in America's thinking about civil rights and about the struggle for civil rights. There's a story that we're going to get to later about an argument in Texas where they just passed a law that said that you have to present on controversial issues all sides of the spectrum. It's not enough to have one book or one position. It's aimed, as so many other efforts have been by Republican-led states, to stand up against critical race theory. But in a one Texas school district, they had the teachers being told that includes that they have to have books that present the other side on the Holocaust. And of course, the teacher was, what other side of the Holocaust? That you don't find a lot of reputable textbooks or any other kind of books or articles or anything of people who are saying, well, the Holocaust was a good thing, or you have to look on the bright side of murdering 6 million Jews and another million of other people who were also deliberately murdered, not just on the battlefield, but murdered as civilians by the Nazis. So basically, there's this idea that we used to have the idea that you could have another side looking at slavery. That's gone. And I think the fact that it's gone is healthy, it's real, it's realistic, and it's one of the reasons that Grant has risen so dramatically, as Brett Baer was talking about, in public estimation. And right now, we have this anomalous situation where Americans look at our current situation, and it's not good. I mean, the country is bitterly divided on everything. There are a whole series of issues where we are losing ground, not gaining ground. It's a difficult time for Democrats, and because they're basically forced, compelled to defend the record of the Biden administration. But then on top of that, you have this new polling that shows that overwhelmingly people are turning away from that Democratic idea that Biden has been pushing very enthusiastically about a bigger government, more activist government, government doing more things for people. Here's the question that Gallup was asking, and I think it's a directly relevant question to where we stand in the country right now. This is the way they phrase the question. Some people think the government is trying to do too many things that should be left to individuals and businesses. Others think that government should do more to solve the country's problems. Which comes closer to your own view? And right now, 52% of Americans come closer to that idea that the government should do less, that the government's doing too many things, and only 43% believe the government should do more. Now, that's a very distinct advantage for people who want government to do less. And that's exactly the opposite of what Biden is putting forward. And again, we are talking about how independents look at the government doing too many things. Among independents, now it's the the percentage of independents since 2019 who believe that the government is trying to do many things, that has gone up by 19 points. It's pretty amazing. That's between 2020 and 2021. And that is, how do you justify spending new money to the tune of $3.5 trillion in the Build Back Better bill, aside from the great alliteration you have with the Build Back Better bill? That's not giving the American people what they want, which is the idea of allowing people to keep more of their own money and making for a less ambitious government program. There's always been this assumption, and it's never been supported by polling, never, that there's this huge constituency that wants government to do more and more and more and more and more. And it's one of the reasons, by the way, that Obamacare never polled well. And Obamacare didn't work for Barack Obama. I mean, yes, they got it passed with their 60 U.S. senators that they had briefly. But then in the very next election, which came in November of 2010, Democrats got wiped out. They lost 63 seats in the House of Representatives. I mean, it was a disaster for them. And it's a very fine column we're going to post on our website by Catherine Rampell. In fact, I'd like to speak to her. She is Jeremy Steiner, Pride of Hillsdale College, already taking care of it. She's on with us on Monday at 2:30 Pacific time. So that will be an opportunity. She makes this very important point. And she says the first is it says it might be tempting for Democrats to conclude that whatever voters' preferences about the general size of government, they'll still support a big government expansion so long as they like the components of that expansion, like universal pre-K, which polls pretty well. But she says there are problems with this logic. The first is that the public doesn't actually know what the components are. A recent poll, we talked about it, from CBS News found that only 10% of respondents claimed to know specific details about what's in the Democratic legislation. Most said they either know no specifics or nothing at all. Given that survey respondents have historically been loath to admit ignorance, these numbers probably overstate how much the public even understands about the Democrats' agenda. Second problem, according to the CBS poll, one of the few things Americans say they have heard about the bill is its huge size. And as we've just established, they're not keen on hugeness here. And finally, there's the problem of execution. In other words, if you can say you're going to do all these things, but then if you don't do them, even after they've passed the bill, the one thing that they can do is raise taxes on you. And that's definitely something the American people don't want, especially when there's already an inflation tax that is damaging the country. We'll get to that coming up on the Michael Medved Show. So many political controversies on everything, and some of those controversies touching very directly on issues of public health and medical science and more. What a great time to hear Ben Carson, somebody who has a great background, obviously, in politics as a presidential candidate and as Secretary of Housing and Urban Development under President Trump, but also as a literally world-renowned pediatric surgeon. And Dr. Carson is going to be speaking tonight. And you can still get tickets. You can still go in Spokane for WPC, Washington Policy Center. Just go to WPCdinner.com. This is one of the nation's largest conservative galas. Always a great time. Dr. Carson will be there. Many of you will be there, people from all over the state. You can also get virtual tickets And just please join WPC, Washington Policy Center dinner tonight. Go to WPCdinner.com. That's WPCdinner.com. We've been talking a little bit about that sense that America is in trouble. And one of the reasons that people had that overwhelming sense during the Carter administration, and there have been more and more people who have been comparing President Biden to President Carter, not in every way, but basically in terms of a fumbling, a bumbling, unclear priorities administration that seems to be mishandling both foreign policy and domestic policy and can't even work with a sympathetic Congress. Carter had big Democratic majorities on both sides of the Capitol Hill, but achieved very little from it. The other aspect of the Carter administration is there was a huge problem with inflation, what people called stagflation, because generally you associate inflation when it crops up and it becomes a factor, you associate inflation with economic growth. But the economic growth was stagnant under Jimmy Carter, and the inflation was tremendous. The inflation was more than twice what it is today, and today it's bad. How do we know it's bad? Well, just take a look at what you're spending. ABC News reported it this way, clip four.
Americans are paying more for everything, from diapers to new cars, up more than 8%, and clothes, up more than 3%. And it could get even worse as the holidays approach.
With the holidays coming up, you might be wondering if gifts you plan to buy will arrive on time.
Americans are looking at shortages on things like toasters, sneakers, bikes, and toys.
There are certain things that are not coming, that will not be here. I know a lot of toy makers that we have talked to have looked into renting their own planes, putting things on trains, renting their own trucks. I mean, it's been dramatic.
Okay, not the kind of drama that you welcome. And then that was ABC News. CNN, again, not a news agency that is hostile to the administration, though they've been pretty tough where appropriate on Joe Biden, but certainly very tough on the economic situation right now. This is clip 12.
And in general, you're seeing prices rise in a number of areas which really make people feel it.
Right. Increases are causing your family hardship. This is a Fox News poll. Look at the 70% say grocery prices, they're causing hardship. Look at that. Gas prices, 67% say increases are causing hardship. Even 53% on housing costs. And when you put all of that together, I'm going to jump to this final slide. John was not expecting this, but that's the beauty of live television. Look at this. Do you approve of Joe Biden's job, both overall and on the economy? And again, look at this tight correlation, right? 53% overall, 51% back in June, 50% in August, 49% on the economy in August, and look at this, 45% and 44%. So the two are very tight together. The economy is actually the thing that's most predictive of the president's job performance at this point, and the financial hardships people are feeling are clearly playing into this, which is playing into this.
James Carville says it's the economy.
It is the economy. He's famous for saying that in the campaign of 1992, which Bill Clinton won. And he won it with, really, when you look back at the numbers, it was relatively mild financial hardship under the first President Bush. But Clinton kept saying, and by the way, speedy recovery to President Clinton, who apparently is suffering from sepsis. And he's supposed to be out of the hospital at some point soon. He's 75, and he should be better. You don't wish an illness or hospitalization on anybody, and not on any former president. He should live and be well. But the difficulty here with the economy right now is not just the actual facts of the economy, where you have 70% of Americans who now say that the economic pains are contributing to their family hardship. You have the White House making very big mistakes in the way they're responding to it. For instance, the chief of staff for the White House, certainly the most influential of all of Joe Biden's aides, Ron Klain, did a retweet with approval showing those fingers pointing at the tweet itself, saying that the idea that families are struggling to afford and food and gas, he says those are high-class problems. I mean, compared to what? To starving? Really? And Jen Psaki today was asked to defend this terrible comment by Ron Klain, the White House chief of staff. And it sounded like this. This is clip 8.
White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain retweeted a message yesterday, not once but twice, that inflation and supply chain issues are high-class issues. But some of the sharpest price increases over the last month included products that every American buys, beef products, chicken, eggs, regular unleaded gasoline, laundry equipment, furniture, clothing, the list goes on. Why would Ron Klain tweet that? And would you agree that's a little bit tone deaf?
Do you think two tweets means more? I'm just curious. So just for context, what Ron Klain retweeted was a tweet from the former chairman of Economic Advisors, Jason Furman, where he said, for a full context, which I think is important, most of the economic problems we're facing, inflation, supply chains, are high-class problems. What he went on to say is, we wouldn't have had them if unemployment rate was still 10%. We would instead have had a much worse problem.
Okay, and the idea that we would have had a much worse problem, the idea that this is not yet a big recession or depression, to say it's high-class problems for people to be worried about inflation is just wrong. The much-acclaimed Secretary of the Treasury under part of the Treasury team under Bill Clinton and an Obama senior economic advisor, former president of Harvard University, Larry Summers, did an interview with an Australian news outlet, and he spoke about the rising inflation. This is clip 6.
You've been warning on inflation risks since February. What's your view on inflation now?
I'm afraid things have come in worse than I expected on inflation. My view in February was that we had a lot of demand coming down the pike, that eventually the bathtub was going to overflow and we were going to have inflation because of the combination of fiscal and monetary policies and a big savings overhang. What has surprised me is how tight the labor market has become, how fast, how many supply side bottlenecks have returned, and how rapidly inflation has accelerated. And that seems to be translated into increases in inflation expectations. So I think we now have a gathering storm of inflation, and we're likely to see some combination of that storm coming to fruition or the central bank being forced to act to contain inflation with potentially serious financial consequences, or some combination of those two things.
Okay, and he goes on to compare this situation to the situation that faced Jimmy Carter and the situation of stagflation. Now, when you're a Democrat, former Harvard president, former Treasury secretary, when somebody with that kind of credentials on the liberal side of things talks about this gathering storm, it's worth attention. And there's a general sense of Americans, use a Jimmy Carter word, malaise. Okay, what do we do about it? We'll talk to Hugo Gurdon, who's written a controversial and, I think, substantive way, means up and out for this greatest nation on God's green earth.